In a League of Its Own, 103.2, Dublin City FM.
Sometimes I feel like throw my hands up in the air. I know I can count on you.
But first up today, let's talk about trees, their protective role in guarding against climate warming, and how that role seems to be threatened now by new pests. To tell us more about this subject, I'm delighted to welcome to the show John Sweeney. He's a climate researcher based at NUI in Maynooth. Hello there, John.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Right, thanks for coming on. The first question would be, is people might not be aware of how important trees are to the whole carbon dioxide and global warming story. So maybe you could just outline that for them, first of all.
Yes, well, you're quite correct, actually. Trees play a very vital role in what we call sequestering carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. And of course, we think often of the rainforests and the great forests of the tropics as the most valuable aspect here, because they are effectively the lungs of the planet in many respects, breathing in carbon dioxide in this case and breathing out oxygen. And for our problems of climate change in the future, trees will be playing a very vital role, because if we have more trees, quite simply, we buy time with what we're doing to the atmosphere. We can perhaps slow down the rate of concentration increase in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere.
Sure, and trees are under threat anyway, but now it seems, just from looking at this press release I got from Maynooth, that there are pests that seem to be emerging as a result of warming. So
yes,
maybe tell us about some of those threats.
Well, it's quite clear that we've often assumed that things will grow in a different way as the world warms, but what we perhaps have neglected to study in the past has been the fact that some of the competitors for trees also will prosper. And as the world gets warmer, even as Ireland gets warmer, some pests, for example, that might be limited by frost to maybe having one or two replications a year, find themselves able to have maybe five or six or even more replications or generations per year. So first of all, the extra warmth greatly increases their productivity and makes them a bigger problem. Even our own native homegrown pests that therefore are going to be a bigger problem. And many people will be familiar with things like the weevils and some of the bark beetles and things mm-hmm. that we already know about that are problems within Ireland. But we also now face the difficulty that as Ireland warms, it's going to be conducive to other pests coming in. And there are a number of things happening in Europe and slightly further afield, which means that some of those pests that we're not familiar with are now beginning to make their way into Ireland. A few of them, just to mention, one is the horse chestnut leaf miner, for
mm-hmm.
example,
okay.
which has spread all the way from the Balkans and is now quite comfortably established in South England.
How does it get here, by the way, or how do any of them get here?
Well, they get here largely by flying. Some of them can fly, and some of them can fly quite long distances or get carried on the wind, or they can come in. Often, in the case of trees, however, they come in on wood, and they come in on infected wood that has been imported from outside the country. And it may not even be timber products that they come in on. Many of them would come in, for example, on wooden pallets, which arrive at our ports. And there has to be quite a comprehensive examination, therefore, of any wood products in ships' holds and so on.
Okay.
For that reason.
And what's the threat at the moment then? How serious is it from
some of these species, when they attack our native trees, I mean, some of them can cause a fairly rapid death of the trees. There is a phenomenon called sudden oak death at the moment, which we're getting quite concerned about, which has again been detected in Ireland. And you can imagine the kind of changes in our landscape that we would see were some of these familiar trees to become diminished considerably. We've seen, for example, the Irish landscape denuded of elm trees in the past 20 or 30 years. So these kinds of things are quite serious. They can cause considerable losses in timber yield. And for a forester, to lose 20 or 30% of your yield, for example, is quite a serious financial impact. And also, of course, if you lose your whole plantation, even after 50 or 60 years of growth, course, you have no income. So they are quite serious to get concerned about. There are ways and means of tackling them.
And just to tell listeners that Maynooth as well as Swansea, University of Swansea, are coming together to try and do something about this.
Yes, I mean, the forestry research people in Wales, Culture in Ireland, our own climate research unit here in Maynooth, and also our Department of Biology have come together to try and see other ways of tackling some of these problems, because as we go through this century, we're not going to be able to use the kind of destructive insecticides that maybe we used 20 or 30 years ago. So we have to look at other, maybe more environmentally friendly ways. And one of the things that we're doing in this particular project is to see other ways, for example, of introducing predators, if you like, on the pests themselves, which might be a more easy way of keeping them in check. And I know one of our partners, for example, is actively involved in trying to look at the role of introducing funguses onto some of these beetles, which effectively kill off the beetles, and do so in a way which doesn't leave, for example, harmful residues in the ground, which more conventional insecticides.
So you use
natural means of control,
yeah.
And these are proving to be quite effective so far, but they are essential. They're essential to try and tackle the problem, because without doing anything, as we get warmer, and in particular as we get drier in the summertime, insect infestations can become very much more prolific in drought conditions in forests in the summertime. And this is the major difficulty that we face in Ireland, that we will create conditions more conducive to those pests in many of our forests. And of course, we're also not sure whether we'll have more windstorms, and we might have more timber blown down. And again, fallen timber may be an ideal habitat for some of these pests as well. So there's a lot of things we have to think about here.
Right. Okay, John. Well, thanks very much for coming on and telling us about that. And I wish you well, and we'll keep in touch. That's John Sweeney. He's director of the Irish Climate Analysis and Research Unit at NUI Maynooth. He was telling us about the danger to our forests from new pests as a result of climate change. Thanks, John.
Thank you, Sean.
Bye-bye. Now, I was just reading this week, just following on for that conversation in Science magazine, certainly trees are under stress, not just here in Ireland, but around the world. In British Columbia, it's reported here in Science magazine, all the way down the Pacific Ocean, past the Rocky Mountains, up to 4 million acres of coniferous forest are completely desiccated and brown. So that's a massive area. It's all been done by the mountain pine beetle. So you can see that one can certainly cause an incredible amount of damage, and that's why the people at Maynooth are linking up with the Welsh authorities to try and do something about these new pests that can get in through the ports, or they can actually fly here in some cases. Also, in another story that caught my eye this week, it's a quirky story, but it's something that caught my eye. Apparently, girls, we've heard that girls, of course, can be daddy's girls. Well, in the case of one particular fish called the stickleback, researchers have found that the females actually will mate, or only base their choice of mating on another male that smells like their dad. That might sound awful to some girls, but that actually is true, and it's reported here in Science magazine. I don't know if it applies to humans, but certainly maybe it does. Maybe they need more research. So anyway, we're going to move on now, and we're going to have a slightly watery theme to the programme from now on. We're going to talk, first of all, to Joe Caffrey. He's a researcher with the Central Fisheries Board. He's going to talk to us about invasive species. They're not invaders from planets far away, as we're going to find out. Invasive species, what they are exactly, and how they're causing damage to our lakes and our river systems. So welcome to the programme, Joe.
Yeah, good afternoon, Sean.
Right, thanks for coming on. I know you're up in Belfast today. You're up in Belfast, I believe, at a conference that you're actually addressing this whole issue of invasive species. So maybe you could tell our listeners, first of all, what is an invasive species in biological terms, and how much of a problem or an issue is this?
Well, I can tell you first and foremost, Sean, that it's a major issue. It's a developing and increasing issue, and one that we're very, very concerned about, not only in Ireland, but I would say worldwide. Now, an invasive species, I think the strict definition would go that it's a non-native species whose introduction or spread threatens the environment, but not only the environment, it also threatens the economy and also human health.
Okay.
Now, I think it's worth saying, Sean, sorry for interrupting
you,
but I think it's worth stating that not all non-native species are invasive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important to notice that an awful lot of the non-native species that have been introduced into this country and other countries are extremely worthwhile from an agricultural, forestry, etc. viewpoint. So invasives really are only those that threaten or actually cause significant damage.
Okay, because I was going to ask you that. I suppose ultimately, if you go far back in time, that every animal and plant came to Ireland from somewhere, so they're all, like the humans as well, they're all invaders of one kind or another.
Well, that's correct. And some, have been tremendously useful and, extraordinarily beneficial to the economy, to the world economy.
Okay, but what we're talking about here is damage that's been caused to our waterways. So I get there was one example that we talked about before when I was chatting with you. It's this Asian clam, it's called. So maybe just as by way of example, you could tell us about this invasive species and what's happening with it.
Yeah, the Asian clam, it's a small bivalve. For all the world, it looks like a small marine cockle, but it's a freshwater species. And we were very lucky to be able to read about it and not worry about it. And the reason I would have done a lot of reading is it was referred to as the most notorious invasive species in freshwater systems in the world.
Okay.
So, as I said, it was very entertaining to read about it.
why is it so notorious? Why does it have such a bad reputation?
It's simply because it has all of the bad traits that an invasive should have. And it can wreak significant environmental and economic havoc where it arises. But as I said, we were reading about it and quite happy to read about it until last April when a biologist, Patrick Sweeney, was doing some work on the barrow and spotted a shell that he didn't recognize, and it was soon identified to be this famous Asian clam or corbicula.
Uh-oh, so you got a bit of a shock, I'm sure, when that started to show up.
We got a major shock because we were very familiar with it, and work had been conducted previously, risk assessment analyses, basically to try and warn us as to what might be the next nasty or nasties to arrive. This had been identified.
And from the time it was spotted then, I believe it spread very rapidly.
Well, when we went down to the barrow, I got a team that we're working under a European-funded project, a CASEY project that we have ongoing in Inland Fisheries Ireland. I was lucky enough to bring our team, to have a team of divers, and we brought the team down to have a look, thinking that we might find a small few specimens that we could go in and either remove or do something to control, hopefully eradicate them. But when we submerged ourselves and did some site examinations, we found that not only were they widespread, they effectively contaminated many kilometres of the river. And at the worst, in one site quite near a very scenic location, St. Mullins on the River Barrow.
Oh yeah, I know it well, it's lovely down there.
It's absolutely fabulous. Underwater, normally, previously you would have seen beautiful gravels, maybe silts, muds, gravels. But now that the corbicula, or Asian clam, has settled, as I said, at its worst, per metre squared, we were getting in excess of 10,000 of these.
In a metre squared?
In 1 metre squared. We would put our quadrats down and we would examine, we would count within a metre squared. So the maximum number we got was 9,400 and odd.
And where are they? Are they just at the bottom of the river, or are they clinging on to rocks or vegetation?
No, no.
Or?
No, they don't cling. They simply lie on the bed. Now, they prefer sort of a gravelly substrate, and they can also burrow. So when you disturb them, within 30 seconds, they can actually vanish from view. They'll actually burrow down beneath the substrate.
Mm.
But in this river, it's quite apparent that they were there for a number of years, because such was the density that, unfortunately, we're fearful that we may not be able to do much about it.
Right, that was another shock when you saw the extent of it. But listeners might be thinking, well, so what? This clam is all over the river down there. What damage is it going to do? Or why should the locals or any of us care about that?
Well, it can cause quite a lot of damage. And again, some listeners might say, well, you know, ecological damage, we're not that terribly worried about. But apart from ecological, and I come back to that, it can have other very significant impacts. And in Ireland, we're very, very concerned, and rightly so, about flooding.
Yeah.
And there's no question, but the expansion of the clam through the Barrow, but into other systems, such as the Shannon, and we now know it is present in the Shannon also, that it can cause flood hazards, because it can accumulate with such abundance that it actually reduces the capacity of the river to discharge water.
And obviously it affects the existing species that are in the water, but we're just running out of time slightly, Joe. Sorry,
sure.
Joe.
Sure, no problem.
Maybe just kind of summarise then, I mean, how are we compared to other countries re-invasive species, and what can we do about it at this point?
Well, we're very lucky that we're an island nation on the west of Europe, so we have far fewer invasive species than many other countries do, far fewer than England and fewer again than mainland Europe. However, the ones we have are particularly nasty. Now, what can we do about it? We're very lucky that Europe recognises that invasive species are really, really, you know, very, very important, and they are having significant damage on the environment. So we were lucky to win a few big contracts from Europe. We have a Life Plus project working on Loch Corrib. That's the Casey project I mentioned. We also have an Interreg project that I'm here
down border.
Over. This is a cross-border one, working with Northern Ireland and with Scotland. And here we're working on invasive riparian species.
Okay. We'll have to leave it there, Joe. But listen, thanks very much in telling us something about invasive species, and we'll follow that story closely. That's Joe Caffrey. He's a researcher with the Central Fisheries Board. Thanks very much, Joe. Bye-bye. So, just moving on now, I was looking again at some of the stories that were making news in the world of science this week. And, of course, we're concerned here in Ireland about the numbers of people that are actually doing science in our schools, of the science students that are going into our universities. But certainly Ireland is by no means alone in this. I'm looking here at an article from the USA, where they're doing basic science tests and many of the children are performing poorly. And the reason for this, apparently, is that from 2002, there was a general law in the US introduced that actually emphasised the importance of reading and mathematics. This was part of Don't Leave a Child Behind, was the name of the programme. I guess the emphasis was to make sure that children weren't illiterate, they had basic maths. But as a result of that, there was less emphasis on science, and that was a downside, I guess, of the whole thing. But this is an ongoing issue, and certainly there's very few countries that have managed to escape from the general decline in standards. One country that has managed it, Finland, and some of the Scandinavian countries, Korea. But in general, science is struggling. In Ireland, mathematics is struggling, and we need to address that. Okay, now in the writer's room today, I'm going to talk to the author of Brown Trout in Ireland. It's a lovely book, Dr. Martin O'Grady. He's also of the Central Fisheries Board. I have the book in front of me here. It's a very attractive book, published by the Central Fisheries Board. And hopefully I have Martin on the line. Hello, Martin.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Thanks for coming on.
No bother.
So, you've done this lovely book, Brown Trout in Ireland. I'll ask you first, what was your motivation to do it? You're a scientist, and I know not every scientist likes writing. So, so what motivated you to put this into print in the first place?
Well, I think a lot of people have a fascination with brown trout, Sean, because it's one of very few indigenous fishes we have in the country. They've been here since the Ice Age, and I suppose most anglers, when they start fishing as kids, one of the first fish they come across is a brown trout. So a lot of people have a curiosity about them and where they are and how long they live and so on and so forth.
They're beautiful looking fish, aren't they?
They are indeed, and there's a huge variation in terms of their colour patterns and so on, depending on where they live.
Yeah. And are they? Do they have an unusual life cycle, or they're not like the salmon or the sea trout? I mean, what is their basic life cycle? Do they spend it all?
Their life cycle is very similar to that of the salmon, except that they don't go to sea.
Okay.
They tend to spend their entire life cycle in fresh water. But it's very variable, Sean. I mean, a trout can be born in a small stream only a couple of yards wide and live there within 100 yards of where it was born for its entire lifespan.
Okay, and other ones would move a lot more.
An awful lot more, yeah. Like, we would have big trout populations now in the big western lakes like Loch Corrib and Loch Mask and Loch Conn, and they would be born in inflowing tributaries to the lake. They'd come down from those tributaries, live to adulthood in the lake, and then go back to the streams they were born in to reproduce themselves.
Okay, and some of the fish, some of the brown trout you would get in the lakes can actually get quite big.
Indeed they can, yeah. One of the things that's happened, in fact, since that book was written, is that we've had some resources to look at the genetics of trout. And really we're dealing with a family of fishes,
right,
rather than an individual species. And there's a whole range of life patterns there. Some of the fish, as you say, can be quite long-lived and live up to 15 years of age, at which point it could be over 20 pounds in weight.
Right, that's a big fish.
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah, and when they're in the river then, I mean, they can be quite small as well on the other side of the coin, depending on the, I suppose, availability of food.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, in a very poor, hungry river, say in an area where you'd have granite base rock like Wicklow or parts of Connemara, a 4 or 5 year old adult fish might be only 6 inches long.
Yeah. Now, there have been, I was just talking to one of your colleagues, Joe Caffrey, about invasive species, etc. Is there any threats like that out there to the brown trout?
Oh, indeed, there are, Sean, and it's very hard to know what's going to happen next. But people, unfortunately, are bringing in live animals and letting them off. And we can only second guess what's going to happen, you know.
When you say live animals, what do you mean? What kind of fish, I presume, you're talking about?
Well, fish in some cases, and a lot of invertebrate snails and plants, as Joe would have talked to you about. And all of those things can impact on the ecology and kind of change the spider's web of events that take place naturally. Mm-hmm. And usually invasive species, whether they're plants or insects or fish, generally speaking, you lose out. If an invasive species successfully colonizes an area, the chances are, on average, that you're going to lose 2 or 3 native species as a consequence.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Now, you wouldn't, you used to see rainbow trout, of course, in the Irish rivers a lot, but they wouldn't be regarded as an invasive species. I think they were just escaping from fish farms and such like. So, is that
that's
still...
They're a fish that's native to the west coast of America.
Okay.
And as you say, there have been escapees over the years here from fish farms, but thankfully they've never managed to establish themselves in the wild here.
They didn't breed in the rivers then?
No, okay. No.
So are they gone now?
Like mink have done so and are causing us problems.
Okay. So the fact that the rainbow trout, which I think it was a bigger trout than the brown in general, wasn't it? He didn't breed. That was probably a good thing.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
The trout, I presume, is very dependent then on the health of the waters of the lakes and the rivers. So how are we fixed, say, compared to mainland Europe in terms of our waterways, the health of them?
Well, very well, actually. As you say, they are quite sensitive, not quite as sensitive as salmon to water pollution problems. But I would say, Sean, the fact that we have such good trout stocks all over the country, you know, is a reflection of the reasonably good water quality we have in most places.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
For instance, we have big stocks of trout in the Liffey.
Okay. And in terms of then, say, the people that come over, the economic angle, you know, to fish in Ireland, would the brown trout be a very popular one?
Very much so. Very, very much so. For instance, over the last few years, I think we would have averaged something like 1,500 boats on Loch Corrib alone. And a large proportion of those boats would be used in season by tourists for angling.
Okay, and there is, I mean, people that are, we're just running out of time a little bit, but people that are interested in angling, of course, there's loads of information for them in the book as well.
Well, absolutely, and if anyone wants a copy, they can just send an email to sandra.doyle@inlandfisheriesireland.ie. We've changed our name recently.
Okay, give us that one again, sandra.doyle.
sandra.doyle@inlandfisheriesireland.ie.
Okay.
And Sandra will look after them for the princely sum of 15 euros a copy.
Yeah, and it's a lovely illustrated book as well as everything, and I'd definitely recommend it. There's some lovely sketches in there and photographs and everything, so it's well worth investing.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much, Martin, for coming on.
You're very welcome.
Okay, that's Martin O'Grady. He's the author of Brown Trout in Ireland. He's a researcher with the Central Fisheries Board. So now, just to mention now, I'd just like to say that anybody that'd like to get in touch with the show here, I'd love to get some feedback. My email is to contact me here is science spinning at dublincityfm.ie. So anyone out there that has any story suggestions relating to science in Ireland or an event coming up or feedback relating to the show, please get in touch with me. Also, anyone that may want to research a particular science subject in Ireland, you can go online. I've got podcasts that are searchable by topic or by the researcher, and they're at Science Spin this time, sciencespin.podomatic.com, and also Science Spin magazine is available at sciencespin.com for free if you just provide your email address. So that's all I have time for this week, and bye-bye, and talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.